Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Twice a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Tom Flatting. Tom is a managing partner at Hennis Communications, a PR agency exclusively focused on crisis communications. Previously, Tom was the managing editor of the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Detroit Free Press. So, Tom, thanks so much for joining today. Really appreciate it. I wanted to have you on. I think it's an interesting time with coronavirus and sort of, you know, you're an expert on crisis communication. Every, you know, company, organization needs to sort of have a response prepared for, you know, what if something goes wrong? So I think that's probably a good way to start. You know, can you talk about, since COVID-19 has begun, this, you know, pandemic, how you all have been adjusting, and just, you know, general thoughts and general lessons that you've, you know, from your years of experience are telling your clients on how to react to this and be prepared for the potential crises that occur related to it?
Absolutely. Thanks for, by the way, for having me on, Ari. I appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time, giving me the opportunity. So we are in crisis communications. That's what Hennis does. We basically focus on crisis communications and issues management and reputation management. I've been with Hennis for about 5 years now. I can certainly tell you in those 5 years, just like anyone would tell you about virtually everything, we have not faced a crisis the magnitude and sweep and seriousness, severity of the pandemic of COVID-19. It has touched every facet of our lives. It has touched every business, and we've done a considerable amount of work preparing businesses in the early days, February, March, preparing different organizations, different businesses for how they were going to communicate with their employees, communicate with their business partners, communicate with their customers, with their shareholders if they're publicly traded, with the media and if they're in the public eye, about what they were doing to adjust to the pandemic. And it's been, you know, primarily, obviously, Ari, a safety message. But there have been all kinds of other facets to it. Work from home was something that businesses had to figure out how to do and communicate about. So we apply some fundamentals of crisis communications to virtually everything. And at Hennis, those fundamentals are tell the truth. And if you forget the next four I'm about to tell you, but remember to tell the truth, you've got a good chance of surviving the crisis with your reputation intact. Because you ask yourself, if you don't tell the truth, first of all, we tell clients all the time, if you don't tell the truth, we don't want to work with you. But if you don't tell the truth, you're going to get caught. The truth will come out. And the cover-up, how often is the cover-up worse than the original sin? Because then people don't trust you, your credibility's shot, and you have a host of new problems. So tell the truth. In this era, you have to tell it fast. We used to talk about the 24-hour news cycle. I don't know what the news cycle is now. 24 seconds? I was 33 years in newspapers. I am so old, I actually started on a typewriter, which I'm sure you've never used. But the acceleration, we are living amid a communications revolution, and people don't even realize it, because when you're living amid a revolution, you don't stop and think about it. But it is now a 24-second news cycle or less. So you have to be prepared to tell your story as fast as you possibly can. We tell people to tell as much of it as you can. Tell your story, rip the Band-Aid off. People use buzzword phrases like control the narrative, and I hate buzzwords, but there's truth in that. You want to be able to tell your side of the story and control your side of the story. One of the best ways to do that is to tell as much of it as you can. I mean, I'll ask you, what do you think when an organization, a person, a business is caught in a spotlight, particularly being accused of something, and they say no comment or they're not available for comment? What's your immediate knee-jerk reaction?
Yeah, I think, you know, for myself, and I'm probably speaking for others, it sounds like they're guilty, right? You know,
correct. Exactly, right.
We assume guilty instead of, you know, you're supposed to be presumed innocent, but it's presumed guilty when you say things like that.
Guilty, right? Because if you weren't, you'd be talking about it, right? You'd have something to tell. So even if you can't, And there are, if you're in the early stages of a crisis, you may not know what happened yet. You may not know how you're going to fix it. But there are always better things you can say than no comment, you know, like, we know we have a problem here. We don't know what that problem is, but we're bringing in an independent investigator and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And when we find out what happened, we're going to tell you that too. And we're going to do our best to fix it. You haven't really said a lot, but it's a lot better than no comment. So tell the truth, tell it fast, tell it all. And if you kind of follow those guidelines, those are kind of the fundamentals roadmap to successful crisis communications. Now, COVID has laid a whole new level of complexity on all this. We got asked a lot before this, what are the most frequent kinds of crises you guys deal with? And there were two in the last couple of years. One was cybersecurity, data breaches. You know, in the cybersecurity world, they talk about how there are two kinds of companies and organizations. You've been breached or you're going to be breached. It's just so widespread. So those are the kinds of things you can prepare for now. You can talk about as an organization, what are we going to say if we have a cyber breach or we're subject to a phishing incident or we have a data breach? And prepare those communications now. The second one was in this era, in the Me Too era, it was accusations of discrimination, sexual harassment. And that's another one that you can prepare for. You don't want it to happen. You know, nobody wants to call Hennis Communications. We get that. People frequently say that. I'm really sorry I got to call you. I know. But preparing for the crisis, and we frequently get thrown into the middle of crises because people don't prepare. It's hard to put a return on investment. You can't put an ROI on crisis communication planning. But, you know, like Bruce Hennis, our founder, likes to say, what's your largest uninsured asset? It's your reputation. And so while you can't put a price on it, protecting a reputation that you have built up over years and that can be torn down now in minutes is a smart thing to do.
I'm gonna borrow that phrase. I really like it. It's a really clever phrase. So
you can have it.
So I think that's a good segue towards, you know, how do you convince executives, you know, at corporations as well as at, you know, nonprofits to be prepared for these crises? And what are things that both they can do on their own as well as when they work with you to be prepared for these types of crises, especially considering the fact that we've moved from a 24-hour, you know, cycle to an immediate cycle and an immediate response?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of times companies prepare for the next crisis after they've had one and they weren't prepared. That's a sobering experience. But increasingly, you'll find that we work with attorneys a lot. So I don't know, 40, 50% of our work is referrals by attorneys. Because someone has a problem, who do they call? They call their attorney, in-house counsel, you know, outside counsel. And attorneys increasingly are advising their clients, you know, prepare for that crisis now. Another thing Bruce loves to say and others in my field love to say is use peacetime wisely. You know, use this time when you don't have a crisis to prepare. But we also walk them through, and you can do this yourself. You know, we'd love for you to hire us. We think we'd do a really good job for you, but it's not rocket science. You can do this for yourself. So if we step in and we're going to try to help an organization prepare for a crisis, the first and simplest thing we're going to say is, so what are you most worried about? What keeps you up at night? And a lot of times if we engage in a formal process with a company, we'll start with what we call a vulnerability audit. And it is an audit, and it's a way to, we try to get as many people from the leadership team and from as many different areas as we can in one room. And then we just go around the room and we say, what keeps you up at night? What are you worried about? And a lot of times that, you know, it's what you expect, natural disaster, data breach, people will bring up a lot. You know, an accusation of discrimination or harassment. But there are also having that leadership team in the room. First of all, you get buy-in from the people who may be thinking, I'm a really busy person, and now you're going to take a couple hours of my time with this guy talking about a crisis that may never happen. So it helps sensitize people to that. But many times, CEOs, CFOs are exposed to worries that their department heads have that they never even think about. For example, one company we worked with, they were in the labeling and packaging business. And one of their executives said, you know what I worry about? I worry about, because our packages are built to last, they use our product and then they put something illegal in our package, or they put something that's not approved for our package. It's not even our stuff, and it blows up and it causes a disaster. And our names on the box, our names on the label, we didn't do anything. And everybody in the room kind of stopped and went, man, I never thought about that. And we planned for that crisis. So we do the vulnerability audit, and we normally will get, I mean, depending on how active the group is and what the business or organization is involved in, we might get 50, 60 ideas. Well, you can't prepare for 50 crises. It's unrealistic. So we go around the room and we say, okay, of those 50, what are the most likely? I mean, you might stay up at night because you think a meteor is going to hit. I guess a meteor could hit, but it's not likely enough to really plan for. So we grade them. What are the most likely? And we'll grab, you know, and we'll put, you know, 1, 2, 3. We take the ones, the most likely, and we say, okay, so if that happened, if that's likely, and if it happens, which of the likelies will do the most damage to your reputation? Which of the likelies will hurt your business the most? And we give them an A, A, B, C. And then we take the one A's and we actually write. Now, it's not perfect because every crisis is a little different, but it gets you way ahead of the game. And so for those 1A crises, those are the things that are realistic that could happen to your business. And if they happen, they're going to do serious damage. And we plan what the company can say, and we write the messages ahead of time, and we write the social media posts ahead of time. And then they're approved. They're signed off on by the lawyer. They're signed off on by HR, by the CEO. And then if that crisis hits, you're ready for that first cycle of information, that first social media cycle, that first news cycle, because you have prepared messages. And in many cases, you only need to tweak them and you go, and you're not no commenting. You're out there with something. The other facet of preparation is putting together an internal team that when the crisis hits, they know what their roles are and they know what they're going to do. You know, the CEO is often on that team, is often the leader of that team, but not always. But it's certainly communications is going to be part of that team if you have your own communications people. Marketing may well be part of that team. Operations, because almost always there's an operational issue. Which reminds me, one thing we run into a lot is businesses have operation emergency plans. I mean, it's really, really risky not to. So they know what they're going to do if the lights go out. I was working at the Detroit Free Press. This is going back a ways, but I was working at the Detroit Free Press during the great blackout of the Northeast in 2001. We had to put out a newspaper with no power. But we had planned for that crisis, and we had lined up printing plants that would agree to print our paper that were geographically close enough where they were still active. But we could get the paper back to Detroit. So those are the kind of operational plans you have to have. So people have an operational emergency plan, but then they don't have a companion communications plan, because when the emergency hits, the people that care about you, again, your employees, your customers, your business partners, they're going to want to know what you're doing about it. What are you going to say about it? And that's what they're not prepared for. And I get it. During a crisis, you're trying to get the paper out with no power. You're trying to deal with the crisis, but you have to remember that what you say about it is the first thing people are going to know about how you reacted and how you dealt with it. So I would argue, selfishly, the communications are a key part of any operational emergency plan, and that's the crisis communications plan we help people prepare for.
That's a great answer. And one of the things that I think you touched on multiple times there that I resonated with me that has been a recurring theme is, you know, you talked about getting buy-in from executives, but you also talked on social media, and I've heard from multiple people, right, that the CEO doesn't necessarily buy into, you know, a lot of companies or a lot of people in social think there should be a head of social. And they talk about buy-in. You know, how do you get buy-in for, like, those are good integration, right? Social and crisis comms, because I think they play a hand-in-hand role. of getting buy-in on things that, to your point, you can't measure ROI. You know, how do you convince the executives that, hey, you have to pay attention to this and you have to take 2 hours out of your busy day today to go and prepare for this? Because yeah, there might not be an ROI, but it could also mean the difference between you having a job tomorrow and you not having a job tomorrow.
So social media is a good example of that, right? Because it's relatively new. I think it's, you know, in true mass popularity, 15 years, maybe 20 years. I mean, I got on Twitter and I was relatively early. That was 2007. So that was 13 years ago. But for a long time, social media was ignored by organizations because many, you know, the executives weren't on it. They hadn't grown up with it. Your generation grew up with it. You are the digital generation and you understand, but they hadn't. And yeah, it is a place where people, you know, people read about the Kardashians and talk about what they had for lunch, but it is a lot more than that. It is the place now where reputations are most often attacked first, where reputations are made and lost, oftentimes frighteningly in a matter of minutes. And it has bled so much that it's almost impossible to separate media and social media now. I will tell you, as a dinosaur that worked for newspapers in 33 years, I don't particularly think all this is good, but the fact of the matter is, good or bad, the place people now go most often to get news is social media, even though they don't produce any news. But that's where the news outlets put it. That's where people talk about it. So what happens when you hear something extraordinary happen and you want to find out right away? You go to Twitter. You know, what happens when you see something and you want to tell people about it? You go to Facebook. You know, what happens now if you want to boycott a company? If you're an activist and you think somebody did something wrong and you want to really hurt them and you want to stage a boycott, where do those start? They start on social media. So ignore it at your own peril. And I get that, you know, organizations are strapped for people, they're strapped for money. And now COVID hit and people are out of work and people have less money than ever because they've had to buy PPE and they've had to money they never expected to spend. But it's money well invested to, at least within your organization, know what people are saying about you on social media and have a plan for what you're going to do if you're attacked on social media.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I definitely get that sort of the buy-in from executives who didn't grow up with it. That, you know, is something that I never thought of it that way. But to your point, it is very logical, you know, sort of conclusion and the way to get buy-in at that level is explain to them in sort of today's terms why it's important. So as we begin to wrap up, you know, the question that I always ask folks is, you know, what is that one lesson or that one thing that, you know, if you were starting your career over in crisis comms that you would change differently that you've learned now?
Yeah, well, for me, you know, it's only been 5 years. So I don't know exactly what I would change. I mean, one of the things I learned was, one of the most valuable things was that I think I was attractive in this field because I was so deeply enmeshed in media. I was a managing editor. I ran large newsrooms. I should understand how the media works, and that's still very attractive to people who are caught in the public eye. But the other thing that gave me was that meant I oversaw 300 or 400 people. And so I dealt with most of the crises that our clients now deal with. I went through labor strikes. I negotiated union contracts. I dealt with harassment issues within my newsrooms. So I did a lot of that. And I think if I could start over 5 years ago, it took me a couple of years to realize that I can apply. I'm not going to tell the client what to do because they know their business better than me. But I can apply some of the things that I've lived through and help lead my organizations through to this leader and how it affects communications. Ultimately, I'm the communications guy and I'm going to stay in my lane, but I can tell them how communicating you can, you know, ultimately the client chooses, right? And if it's legal, moral, and ethical, that's their choice. If it's illegal, immoral, or unethical, I'm going to tell them that and throw my body in front of it. But if it's not, then it's their choice. But I want to give them options and I want to be able to tell them, if you choose to do A, you're likely to experience B. And I know that because I did it or I experienced this with a client. So I would probably apply more of that back then that I now apply.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. For those looking to, you know, follow you on social media or connect with you or maybe hire you, you know, where can they find you?
Well, we're at Hennis. Hennis Communications can be found at www.crisiscommunications.com, crisiscommunications.com. I'm on Twitter, my last name Flatting. I'm on LinkedIn, my last name Flatting. And I'm also on Facebook. So I'm out there. We're not hard to find. Encourage you to go to our website if you want to explore it. Give me a holler and we can talk more about what you're facing and how we might be able to help.
And for everyone listening or watching, the URLs will be in the description so you could check them out there. And also I love the domain name. It's a great domain name.
I give my boss credit. That was a really, really smart move that Bruce made. I mean, this was back in the dawn of buying URLs. And when he made Hennis a pure play crisis communications firm, he bought that one right away. And it was well worth the investment.
Yeah, definitely one of the best domain names for a business, especially when you're like yours. Well, Tom, thanks so much again. And, you know, hopefully we can have you on the podcast maybe another time to talk more about crisis comms.
Love to do again, Ari. Thanks a lot. And may you have no crises.